Scott, I am so happy to introduce this new partner of ours because, well, because they're a partner of mine, a personal gear partner.
They become your new appendages, right?
Well, I've literally carried them for 3+ days on a long trail run, you bet. And the name of this new partner of ours is Lakey Poles.
L-E-K-I, Lakey Poles. They are trekking poles, Don. Don, I've been aware of Lakey Poles for probably 30 years because I used to be a skier, and they make great, high-quality, lightweight, strong poles. And I guess over the last few years, they've gotten into trail running, and they have great trail running poles.
And you may ask yourself, so what the heck? You know, I've been running for years without poles, and I think poles are reserved for people that can't run and maybe need poles. But my goodness, if you look at some of these races like Hard Rock and Bigfoot and a long list of other races where there's lots of climbing, poles allow you to become a more efficient athlete. Unbelievable how much using your arms helps you move up that hill. It's incredible.
You know, ever since trying out the Micro Trail Pro, which is one of their models, every single training run I've been on, I have used those poles, and I have fallen in love with trekking poles.
Well, speaking of, you use the word fall, and that's one of the things that's helped me prevent is a fall. Right when I catch a toe, especially when we are talking about these 200-mile runs or less, and you get a little bit lazy sometimes and that toe catches something, bam, that pole is right there to give you that extra half a second you need to get that foot placed so that you don't face place onto the trail yourself. So they're fantastic for safety and efficiency.
We realized that we wanted to have a trekking pole partnership. So we looked at all of the different poles out there, and we were lucky enough to team up and partner up with Lakey to bring the Trail Runner Nation more awareness of trekking poles, but more importantly, a discount for all Trail Runner Nation listeners.
All you do is go to our partners page, that's trailrunnernation.com. Go to the partners page, click on the Lakey banner, and you'll find yourself inside your own private trekking trail studio. And you can select the pair that fits you best, put in the code TRN17 at checkout, and get a 20% discount.
And over the next few weeks on these podcasts, we're going to talk about some of the features that make these the best poles out there, and talk to some other runners that we have introduced to trekking poles. And they're going to talk about what they have found in their personal experiences with trekking poles, and especially Lakey trekking poles. So stay tuned to those podcasts.
Yeah, these are runners that you know and have listened to on this podcast. Ones you know you can trust. So go to Trail Runner Nation Partners page, click on Lakey, and get yourself a discount. Health IQ. Because healthy people are lower risks. And that's what Health IQ has done. Life insurance policy for the healthy.
And it's not a discount life insurance company that they're dealing with here. It's the A-rated life insurance companies that are giving you discounted rates because you are healthy. The way
Scott,
it should be. Makes sense.
Scott, when I think of Health IQ, I think of your quizzes you make me suffer through.
Well, I'm going to say they're not my quizzes. These are quizzes that Health IQ sends out to those who subscribe to their website. And they hopefully will make us more healthy by teaching us about good health. All right, so today's is a good quiz because it relates to our new partner, Lakey, with the trekking poles. This one is called Agility, Finding Balance to Avoid a Fall. What do you think about that one?
I'm ready. Hit me with it.
Oh, first question. If one is on crutches with a broken ankle, what footwear is best for the non-injured foot? Open-toed shoe, boot with a heel, closed back shoe, or flip-flops?
C. I don't even remember, Scott.
Closed back shoe. And the answer is you're right. Sturdy shoes with a closed back, non-slip sole, and minimal heel height are best. Avoid high heels.
Yeah, when in doubt, guess.
Okay, here we go. Next question. Next question. When running, most falls occur when running A, uphill, B, on a rubber track, C, downhill, or D, upstairs.
Oh, no, running downhill. It happens running fast and objects come quicker.
You are correct. Control speed and keep head up to avoid obstacles and maintain footing. Congratulations. Okay. You know, only 73 of Americans got that question right?
73% or 73 Americans? So
percent.
I was right on my guess and I was right on my knowledge. Let's go see if I'm 3 for 3.
3 for 3. Last question. Studies of balance exercises find that ones that work best to train the brain for balancing into old age involve 1, sweeping moves like arm swings.
No.
2, lengthy inactive periods.
Negative.
3, fast movements like sprints.
No.
Or D, timed movements like dancing.
Timed movements like dancing, D.
You are 3 for 3 today, Freeman. Timing as well as strength matter for balance. And dancing is a great way to train the brain to have more agility and awareness.
So, Scott, do I qualify for Health IQ?
At least for those 3 questions, you do. You're a healthy person. You deserve good insurance rates because you're healthy.
So how do I get them?
Go to healthiq.com/TRN.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast with me, a complete imposter here in London, England, and your 2 real hosts over there with a skeleton behind them very early morning in the studio. It's Scott and Dom.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of like old brothel hookers like buried out here.
But I know it's on the upper edge and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
Okay, we'll clear that up. That will the group of the nation and podcast downloaders are very sophisticated.
They are.
They're unlike any other group out there. They're tolerant. They ignore our many imperfections, and they'll be able to substitute the word. No problem.
They will.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Welcome to another
edition. Are you guys all together?
No,
we're all in different. Oh. Actually, we're not in different states, but we're
oh, gotcha.
all remote.
Okay, all right. Sorry for interrupting the introduction.
Oh no, that was your introduction. You blew that. Now we're just into the conversation. Here we go. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott War.
And I'm Candace Burt.
And today we have joining us. Actor. I don't know if he's an actor. He's an athlete. He's, you know what? Cameron, we have.
Are you an actor?
No. Well, he might be. We have very, very detailed information on you via WikiFame, and Candace is going to help us with that because we looked it up, and we're going to kind of quiz WikiFame and see how accurate it is. Candace, throw us a few facts, and let's see if it's true or not true, and then we'll get off on our discussion.
All right, so first off, we have you as a bow hunter, a runner, and a TV host for Outdoor Channel.
Yeah, I'm not on Outdoor Channel right now, but those have all been true at one time, yes.
Okay, so that kind of qualifies as actor, okay? So I would just want to submit that for your consideration. Anything else, Candace?
I actually had my SAG card at one time, but I don't know why. I was in a hunting commercial. And so they had all these people coming from L.A. to film it, and they were all SAG. So they got me SAG, which was sweet because I kept getting checks in the mail all the time from this commercial. So technically, I guess I am an actor.
There you go.
Wow.
Okay.
A professional actor.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So anyway.
Candace, what else do we have?
Go ahead with.
So it also says that you have your own YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah, I definitely have that. Yeah, I haven't updated it over a year, but it's, I think it at one time it had like 17 million views. So, I mean, it's been popular. I just haven't had time to put new videos up.
Wow, that's significant when you get to 17 million. Is that wrap it up, Candace? Do you have anything else burning your attention there, or have we covered many of the things on there?
No, it looks like everything else is pretty straightforward.
All right.
give us an interesting fact about you, Cameron, that maybe even people that know you or have heard you on other podcasts or seen you on the Discovery Channel or a commercial wouldn't know about you.
Well, I mean, a lot of people who follow me on social media are surprised to find out that I still have a regular 9-to-5 job. So I don't talk about it that much because it's like, that's what most people do. So it doesn't seem that noteworthy to me, but, I have a lot sandwiched around that job, but yeah, I've been the same place for 21 years. So
wow.
Might be surprising.
Without telling us where you work, do you have a job that you sit at a cubicle? Are you carrying and lifting things? Do you know, what kind of physical stressors does that job apply?
Not much physical, more mental. I mean, I'm, you know, a superintendent over engineers and construction workers. So, I mean, it's mostly I'm just managing manpower and, you know, helping problem solve. And I like the people that I work with, and I've been there a long time. So it's physically, it's not too demanding. You know, you hopefully get that out of the way when you're young. And that's what I did. So I'm pretty lucky.
Very good. And also a ultra runner. You've competed in the 100-mile distance. I believe you ran Western States. And you've also completed one of Candace's 200s, Bigfoot, and you're going after some more this year at Moab. And so I think the first question that I'm curious to learn and I'd like to ask is, what is easier, a 100-miler or a 200? And I picked the word easier for a reason. One, because it just came out when I texted it, but we don't look at these things as being, you know, hard. We which one's easier, do you think?
Man, I don't know. Cause every race I do, there's always times where I'm like asking myself, why am I doing this? And that's from a marathon up to 200, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's not so much about easy, I guess. It's just about the journey. And, you know, when I look back on these races, like Bigfoot, it's a long run, as you guys know, and I was in pain for a long time. And when I look back and think of it, though, I don't think about that at all. I don't even remember that. All I remember is the good times and the you know, just the shared encounters with other runners and hanging out with my brother. And then, of course, seeing Candace at the finish. And, you know, that's what you focus on. So that's why you keep signing up. I don't know. I don't know what would be easier. I enjoy both of them. I'm excited for this Moab just because it's more of a journey than a race. You know, you got, instead of saying, hey, I got to go on a 3-hour run, I got a 3-day run. So it's a whole different measuring stick. But I don't know how to answer about the easy.
No. I think that's a good answer. And I've had a chance to get coerced into running a couple of these of Candace's races. And I think with a longer race, the tempo is slowed down quite a bit. So there isn't any real intense exertion because you can't afford to do that. You bury yourself and put yourself in a hole that you can't climb out of. And so I think the level of effort is a bit less as far as, you know, your heart rate goes or something like that. And what?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm going to try to do is not win the first 50K. So that's always, I mean, in every race, I don't care what race, including Bigfoot, and a lot of people make this mistake of going out too fast, but you just feel so good. I really need to work on the pace. I know what you're saying. Normally I'm going out until the wheels fall off, and then I'm trying to hold it together till the very end. That's usually my strategy.
Yeah. I found that breaking that race down into a daytime run, nighttime run, instead of just aid station to aid station, it was more of, I've got to run till the sun goes down. And then once the sun goes down, well, now I've got to run till the sun comes up. And it's just an ongoing cycle of running good days and running good nights. And, and thrown a little bit of sleep whenever the body needed it. Let's talk a little bit about about sleep. What did you learn on from the first 200 about sleep management?
I don't know. I learned I'm pretty, I don't think I'm as tough as I'd like to be. And then I also learned that I don't think, so on the flip side, I don't think I needed as much sleep as I took. I was like, I think about 3 hours. And then, you know, I talked about this with Candace before also, but Richard, who ended up winning the race, and I've done more research since then, but it seems like your body resets after 15 or 20 minutes. And that's where him as a winner of the race was sleeping 15 or 20 minutes at a time, as opposed to me where I slept an hour, three different times. So I think I'm more prepared for knowing what my body will feel like after, you know, 48, 72 hours of really no sleep. But I also feel like I learned that maybe I don't need as much time as I took to get that reset. So
do you think going into Moab that you're going to change your strategy? What is your sleep strategy going into Moab?
I'm terrible. I have thought about how to break this thing down a million times, just like everybody does. And just, you know, kind of like Don said, you know, day and night, and then maybe 50 miles at a time, and maybe get 100 out of the way and take a break. I don't know. I don't wear a watch. I don't do anything. I just kind of go by feel. And so I'm just going to have to feel how it goes.
Yeah, I am curious about this topic as well, because after the Tahoe 200 this year, there was a lot of chatter on social media about sleep. And we always have at least one person who sort of loses touch with reality during these races. And it seems to be really dependent on their sleep. So a lot of people were talking about, and I don't know whether this is true or not, because I've only done one of that distance, but a lot of people were saying, just wait till you feel the need for sleep, then sleep. And they say like an hour and a half is a full reset. Whereas some people do really well on the 15 to 20 minute cat naps, like Richard though. So I don't know. I'd be curious to see what you think after Moab with that as well.
Yeah, you know, with Bigfoot, I got 100 out of the way, and then that's where I slept. So I was at 100 and I think 30 hours, and I thought, okay, I at least got that first 100 done. I'm kind of on the downhill of the race now, so I felt like I'd earned a break. And I don't know, it's kind of sleep is by feel for me. And just like, you know, you alluded and we talked about Richard, I think everybody's a little bit different. You know, everybody's body's different, and it's a lot of it's mental, and everybody's mentally at different places too.
Did you find that after you took your hour sleep that you said, you know, you took, did you find it difficult to motivate yourself to get back into the rhythm of going back out there and running, or was it easier than you suspected?
It was awful. It was, I was stiff and had a sleep hangover, how you do. And, you know, it's, I think I was up on, I can't remember where, but I kind of bombed down this really steep part right afterwards. And so after 100, you know, and stopping for an hour, my legs anyway tighten up, and, you know, I'm kind of like pogo sticking down this steep trail, and I'm, you know, it's muggy. And so, yeah, you know, I don't think about it like normally, but since you asked, yeah, it kind of sucked.
So I'm curious, Cameron. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I said, but eventually I got loosened up, of course, and there's a new challenge that crops up. So
Cameron, I'm interested. A lot of people that are listening to our podcast, Trail Running Podcast, don't know about you and your bow hunting skills and part of your life. Tell us a little bit about how you got into bow hunting and what is it that you do?
Well, I got into bow hunting. You know, I grew up in a small town, and hunting was kind of what people did. And you kind of looked up to people that were successful, and, you know, hunters were looked at respectfully. And so I grew up doing that. And when I was young, I kind of graduated into bow hunting. It's more of a challenge. You get a longer season. You see more animals. There's less people. So that's all. It's pretty inviting, but it's very hard. So success rate with the bow is very low because it's, you know, it's hard getting in basically the red zone of big game animals and trying to kill them with a sharp stick. So, I like the challenge. I like being, I was drawn to the wilderness. So I'd go to the Eagle Cap Wilderness in Oregon here. It's the largest wilderness we have at 356,000 acres. So I could get away from people and really live life in the wild and, kind of live off my back and try to get a bull elk killed. And, you know, it's just the whole journey. It's not, you know, at the end of it, if it all works out right and my hard work pays off, well, I got a freezer full of meat and my family's eating well. And so that feels good. And, I was able to, begin as a writer and kind of share those stories and experiences and connect with people who maybe, identified with my journey and, or maybe had the same goal of being a mountain hunter. And so I built a pretty good following and got some momentum and just kind of been writing it out since then. And, you know, still now with social media, I can reach more people with this bow hunting, healthy living lifestyle. And people are very much concerned about where their meat comes from these days, more so than before. And there's no better feeling than being able to pack out a kill on your back and know that it's going to nourish you, your family, and friends. And so that's kind of where I'm at, and I'm connecting with people that share the same mindset and like to work hard. And you know, met a lot of ultra runners along the way. My passion is bow hunting, but I love ultra running because it prepares me for the mountains, and now I love people in both aspects of my passions, bow hunting and running.
Now you say you pack out on your back. I've seen some of those images online. You literally throw that animal across your back and head back into wherever the camp is. That's not easy to do.
No, it's not. That's why, I mean, I train all year, and I just feel like also I owe it to the animal to be at my very best. You know, I mean, to go, you know, when you go hunting, hunting is pretty simple. You're trying to kill an animal. So when something's going to die, it's serious. I take it serious, and I want to be a merciful hunter. I want that animal to, I want to be at the best of my ability when I go on a hunt. And I feel like I owe it to the animals I pursue to do that. So I work hard to get ready. And, you know, then when it comes to pack out, that also pays off.
You know, I've never done it. But this question came into my mind. You say you owe it to the animal. Do you feel a sense of extra power or just, I don't know, responsibility or commitment to that animal? Do you have superhuman strength that kind of comes along? I would imagine you would get some energy from that whole experience that if it wasn't an animal, if it was just a barbell on your back, forget it. It's not going to happen. But when the animal's there, do you feel a sense of you know, extra oomph, if I could use that word?
Yeah, I mean, it's empowering because, you know, life eats life, you know, so we're not here unless animals die. And I feel like as a hunter, I accept that responsibility and know that that happens. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm always remorseful when I do kill an animal. Of course, that's the goal when I go. But I have a lot of respect for the animals that live out there in the mountains. And they have it's not easy. I mean, we stay out one night and we think, you know, we're going to die. Mm-hmm. They're out there 365 days a year laying on rocks. Hmm. And it's not easy. It's not easy to get in bow range and to make it happen. So, yeah, I respect everything about the journey. But when I am successful, it is. It's hard to put it into words. It's empowering, as you mentioned. I feel like I owe it to the animal. So whether I'm beaten down or weak or tired, I can be. I got to get that. I got to get the meat to the freezer. And, you know, otherwise I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So,
yeah, that's, I like that, those sort of ethics of hunting. I think a lot of people respect that whether they hunt or not, whether they're vegetarian or vegan. On a note about carrying the animal out, I mean, how much weight would you be carrying? I guess it depends on the animal, but what kind of loads are you carrying out and how far?
You know, I've killed elk in the wilderness 10 miles back at times. So you're taking pieces out. You know, a big bull elk will weigh 800 pounds on a hoof. So you might have 250 pounds of just meat. So if you can take, break that into two loads, 125 pounds for 10 miles is really hard. So you might be better off doing, you know, breaking that up into three loads, and you'd have to cover more distance, but that's kind of how you have to do it. You leapfrog it. You try to get by a creek where it's cool and the north facing timber, hang the meat, something like that. But it's, I mean, it's an effort. You know, I've killed from bull elk to moose. And then when you kill a moose in Alaska, you have to take all the quarters, the rib cage, everything. So there's like, I don't know, even though how 400 or 500 pounds of things to pack out, you know, and that has to come all the way out, and then you have to get it to get it processed. You know, I've killed a brown bear in Alaska that was probably 900 pounds. And so it's hind quarters. I know there's a video of me packing the hind quarters, and they probably weighed, I don't know, 90 or 100 pounds each. So that was 180 or 200 pounds on one pack. And I wasn't going 10 miles with that, but you don't have to go very far to feel it. So when you got 200 pounds pulling on your shoulders and you're on uneven ground, and I was in hip waders at that time, I mean, it's, you know, it's hard work.
So this is kind of a chicken or the egg question. You know, do you hunt to get in shape for running ultras, or do you run ultras to get in shape for hunting?
Yeah, it's, you know, my philosophy on hunting is, I have a saying, it's train hard, hunt easy. And so that means I want my training to be harder than any hunt. So I definitely train harder. On a hunt, you're never going to run 100 miles or 200 miles. Or as I was getting ready for, I was kind of getting ready for Moab, but also for season, I did multiple days of marathons or longer per day. I'll never have to do that on a hunt. So it's, the hunting is easier, but being in really good shape gives you confidence, and you have to have confidence to be, to be effective and have success. So it's like, you know, bow hunting is kind of like ultra running. I mean, if your mind goes and your confidence goes, all sorts of things go. Well, that's with bow hunting, it's the exact same thing. You have to be so focused and so positive that your arrow is going to hit exactly where it's supposed to. And the training gives me that, because I know, okay, I've put in work, I've done everything I need to do, I just need to, you know, implement my game plan. And so they both go hand in hand, but for sure the running is harder than the hunting, but they both help. I mean, they help each other for sure.
I'm curious too, what was sort of the shift where you went from just a dedicated hunter to more of a professional, even I think we could say celebrity, kind of a bow hunter personality and all that?
I just remember being, you know, I did the whole thing, did the whole 10Ks, 5Ks, like everybody did. I used to run to get in shape for football, and then I just kind of graduated with just a new challenge. Oh, I wonder if I could do a half marathon. Okay, it's a big challenge. I'm going to try to do a full marathon. And so I did that in 2002. And then I remember this guy that I worked with, Bud, in this newspaper or the magazine article, and it was about at that time it wasn't about Western states. Oh, no, I heard about this ultra marathon, and they had it up in Corvallis, and it's called the McDonald Forest. And so I'm like, wow, that sounds amazing, 31 miles in the mountains. So I go up there and I do it, and it's like, I was so miserable and felt like nobody could, this is like harder than anybody's ever done anything. And, you know, I was feeling pretty proud of myself. Well, I was getting towards the end, you know, and about, I was five something, maybe even close to 6 hours. I can't remember now, but anyway, I see these four guys running towards me, you know, I'm heading to the finish line. And so they had bibs on and stuff. And I'm like, God, I hope I don't have to come back. And so I get to the finish.
And, typical.
I was kind of wondering what the heck's going on. So I asked somebody there, I said, hey, I saw these four guys, they're running back up the trail. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's, you know, well, one of them was Craig Thornley. And there's these four guys here that were just beast ultra runners. and John Tyser was one of them. And so they said, yeah, they're doubling today because they're getting ready for Western. And so all that was like foreign to me. You know, they're going to run 31 again, so they're going to get in 62, and they're getting ready for Western. And I had no idea even what Western was or people ran 100 miles. So once that kind of the pieces of the puzzle were exposed, then I was like, man, people can do this. And so I didn't even know it was a thing. So once I found out it was a thing, my goal was to run Western and see if I could do it. And so that's kind of how it got going.
That, go ahead, Candace.
To sort of enumerate on that, though, how did you go from being just, you know, like a good bow hunter to somebody that, you know, millions of people follow and are interested in?
Yeah, okay, that was the original question, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I liked your answer. I thought that was good.
No, but that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm still curious.
But, yeah, I know. It's just, I just found, you know, like I said, bow hunting is hard, and I've always been successful hunting. I mean, I think I'm just a good hunter, but to be like, I don't know, to be successful on every hunt, it took me ramping my game up. So I figured if I could run 100 miles in the mountains, that I could do anything. It gave me confidence in regular life. I mean, even at work, but I mean, especially bow hunting, that it just gives you, you know, you've been through so many ups and downs in a 100-mile race, and it just seems like it affects your life, you know, just in so many positive ways. And so it really translated to bow hunting, because bow hunting is sort of like that same roller coaster journey where you could be down and tired and you don't think you can do it anymore. And the you know, you got a storm moves in and the weather's pounding you and you're by yourself and you're like, I just can't do it. And then you fight out of it. You eat a little bit, you warm up a little bit, you see, you know, you earn that success. And it just went hand in hand with ultra running, because that happens time and time again, even in one race. And so I just, as I had more success in hunting, I don't know if it was because I was running more and expecting more of my body and wanting to learn more about myself and my abilities. I don't know how that, you know, there's a whole chicken and egg thing, as was alluded to earlier. It's just that they both accentuate each other, and they just, it's kind of both the running and the body have been on the same trajectory, it seems like. So I don't really know, you know, part of what makes me, I guess what people like to follow is for inspiration, because I've told them, you know, my story. I'm pretty open about everything, and, you know, everybody has ups and downs, and, you know, some days you feel like training, some days you don't, but people can identify with that. And so they've been inspired, because they know that I started off and struggled with the 5K and couldn't hardly break 40 minutes in a 10K. And now I'm doing 200-mile races. So it's like the everyday. It's not like I'm born with this amazing talent and like you watch Usain Bolt on TV and you're like, you're almost in awe. It's like watching art. And so people, it's harder to identify with somebody like that, but people can identify with me, so it inspires them. So that's kind of helped me to just, once you inspire somebody, it's like, they never forget that. I mean, you can do something cool and they can be like, oh man, that's amazing. But if you inspire them to expect and ask more of themselves, they never forget that and they're loyal. And so that's sort of, I think, why the connection's been there.
Yeah, you said what popped into my mind when you were saying that, you know, you inspire others and anybody that's running some of these things. And so I'll talk kind of about the trail run, ultra marathon stuff, that you inspire others. But how about inspiring ourselves? You know, there's some of that too, because you had said, and I think most of us agree, that we become better at many things, at work, at hunting, at whatever, because we push ourselves past things that we could normally otherwise, you know, question whether we could do. And I think there's some self-inspiration that occurs, some self-confidence building for going through these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree, because when you go through, as you know, what happens in a 200, the little things like that happen at home don't seem like that big a deal. Mm. You're like, okay, I've been dehydrated and where my legs were cramping up and I just hadn't had a shower in 2 days. And so what if the ice machine's broke in the fridge? You know, I mean, it's not that big a deal. So it just puts things in perspective, which I think that's one thing a lot of people are missing, is that just perspective. Sometimes we take a lot of things for granted. Me too. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm perfect, but those tough challenges really just kind of, I don't know. It just, like, as I said a couple times, put it in perspective. So I think that's, we do benefit ourselves also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting, because I know when I run a really long ultra, there's certain things that I look forward to once I'm done that I totally took for granted, you know, like a bed or a nice meal. Are there things that like that you appreciate a lot more, like specifically now that you've done these long ultras and these long hunts? I'm sure do the same thing.
Yeah. It's just everything. It's the simple things, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, money doesn't matter. Nothing matters. What matters is seeing your family or just hanging out at the home or your dog coming up. And you know, it's just a simple thing. It's just regular life. It's just regular life is sweeter. Hmm. Just because you've been miserable.
Do you think that sometimes you as a person need that time away to come back and appreciate the simple things?
Yeah. I mean, because without that, you don't know. I don't know. I even think, like, when I go to other countries hunting and I see how they live, say in Tanzania, when I come home, I'm like, oh, I can't believe how good we have it. I want to tell everybody. It's like, guys, you have no idea how bad it can be. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so you can't tell everybody that. And it's not going to resonate anyway, because they didn't see it. And it's just somebody telling another story. But it's just things like that. I mean, that's what I think makes a well-rounded person. I don't know. I just think it's so important just to get out of our comfort zones like that. And people, that's kind of a cliche, is you got to get out of your comfort zone. And there's no way to get further out than 100 or 200. So if that is a thing and that's a saying, we're doing it. And I really think there's benefits to it. And that's one reason why I love doing it. I mean, I can't wait to be miserable. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, there's a lot of curiosity of what's going to happen to me, you know? And so you can kind of imagine in your own mind the worst scenario. And then whatever comes at you probably falls short of your imagination. So I think it's good to prep for a race and just really think, you know, this is going to get ugly and it's going to be painful. And during some of those moments, it could always be worse. There could be rain. Well, now there could be wind and rain. Well, there could be ice in that rain. I mean, it always can be so much worse when you're out there.
Yeah.
Well, I think what Cameron was saying earlier, that if you've done the work beforehand, you can have those dreams about what could happen, but you also have the confidence going in that you're going to be able to handle it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing, is the races I struggled the most in probably is where I wasn't as prepared as I should have been. You know, I mean, when you put in the work and you can quote weather any storm, it doesn't matter. I mean, you're going to push through. It's just where I struggled is where the seeds of doubt were in my head already. And I did this 24-hour race in June and I hadn't done any long runs. And so I'm just like, okay, this is going to suck. And I mean, before I'd even run a mile. So I was like, I really fought myself for 21 hours. I mean, I felt okay for 3 hours. So 21 hours is like fighting myself on making myself not quit. So it's, I feel a lot better going into Moab, you know, knowing that I have the work in. And as you say, you feel like, you know, you'll take on whatever comes at you because you're ready. So I'm more like that this time.
Hey, Cameron, I want to dive into that 24-hour run a little bit. You go in there and you don't have the confidence. You're in there a mile and you're just thinking, what kind of mistake did I make? How do you push through to get to the end of the race? What do you have to do?
Man, you know, it's I probably use 20 different things as motivation. You know, one kind of, you'll say, okay, no, I got to do this for this. And then that kind of wears off. And I'm like, okay, I don't care about that anymore. And, oh, there's people following me. And then pretty, you know, like Christine, you're like, I could care less who's following me. So
yeah,
you get down to it and none of that matters because you end up not caring about anything. And so what always gets to me is that it's hard for me to quit because of myself. I mean, that's just, I don't know. I mean, it's, I don't really have one thing that does it. Other than, I mean, I'll be honest. I do have a lot of people, as I said, who are inspired and who follow me, and, I don't want to let them down. I don't want to let myself down, obviously either, but I really don't want to let people who look up to me down. And I'm one who always says, you know, if you keep pushing, if you keep hammering, if you do this, if you do that, you can get through it and you can achieve your goals. And so if I quit, what is that? I'm not true to myself. So that does motivate me at times. I mean, I remember this was like a few years ago, I was trying to do a back-to-back. And so I did Siskiyou out and back 50K. And then that was on Saturday. Then the next day they had the Eugene Marathon. So I was sitting at the dining room table there, Eugene Marathon morning on Sunday. And I go, I was just like, my feet were so thrashed from the Siskiyou and the day before. My wife comes out. She's like, she goes, don't run. Just don't do it. And I'm like, she goes, did you tell anybody? And I said, no, I didn't tell anybody. She goes, you didn't post about it? I said, no. And she goes, well, don't do it. I said, I told myself I was going to do it. So, I mean, that was it. It was like, so it varies. It's like not wanting to let people down, not wanting to, you know, if I have a goal, I want to get it. So, I mean, I went and did the marathon and, you know, got it done. But it's, you know, God, these races, they'll test every – they will try to break you. I mean, I've never finished one yet where I felt awesome the whole time. I feel good at the end always, but there's always times in the middle where I'm in deep water and I'm like, it's not worth it, you know, but you just push.
Yeah, race directors are good at that, Candace. little out and backs for unnecessary views in the middle of the night that you can't see anything except your sign that says turn around. Yeah, a lot of that stuff, you guys do that to us. I want to get into that where you're out there and you know something's going to happen. You just, because there's always that, what you said, deep water, and you can count on it. It's as sure as a finish line waiting for you. You're going to have to pass through some of those obstacles. And I think that's what I really enjoy about the journey is that risk. It's always there. One mistake or two mistakes and it will greet you and it has no mercy. And so I think that running and staying contained and under control and being the captain of your own ship and making right decisions is very rewarding. And as you're running through the race and things are okay, boy, that's a lot of fun because you have eluded this catastrophe. You've sidestepped all these, you know, daggers coming at you. And I like it when things go well, and I appreciate those moments through that race. And as long as I can dodge some of those obstacles, I think that's what appeals to me about these 100, 200, or 50 mile, or just an hour. You know, just making right decisions is fun.
Yeah, it is. It's it's a big test. I think, you know, a lot of people are talking about the 200 mile races now. And I just think it's, you know, I mean, I just think it's such a special test of endurance. And it means something, you know. It used to be like, if you'd done 100, somebody'd come up and say, so are you the guy who's run 100 miles? You know, I mean, that was like, you didn't know anybody who did that.
Yeah.
Well, now that's what 200s are becoming. You know, it's like something that people talk about. There's not many things in life that you can do that hold that kind of weight, you know, that there's that kind of epicness that come just attached to them. So, we should feel blessed that we're able to toe that line and even take on the 200 or 240 or 2000 or whatever.
Yeah, winner's next, Candace.
Yeah. Well, it really is. You guys who are doing these 200s right now are sort of a special breed of ultra runners. You guys are different. I mean, that's just the truth, because a lot of people are still scared of the distance, and whether they'll ever become as popular as a 100 miler, that may be yet to be seen. But I do think there's differences in the kind of person who's willing to take on such a massive challenge that's still so new and unknown. Nobody knows about sleep. You know, there's so many questions on social media about what you do with the difference between 100 and a 200. Cameron, do you think there's differences in the kind of people who are running hundreds and 200s?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, the hundreds, just the mindset it's a lot different, because, you know, the way I looked at it is, this is just one day out of my life. How bad could it be? I can deal with anything for one day. Well, that saying doesn't work for a 200 mile race. So it's like this whole one day thing. Now it's like, okay, I don't know about 3 days or 4 days. That was never the deal. So it's, I do think it's, you have to be, I don't know. Yes, it is a different mindset. I can't say it's a stronger mindset, because I don't know. I mean, you have to be strong to do 100. It's just, I think it seems really daunting at the beginning. You know, I remember my first 100 is Bigfoot 100, and I was like thinking, okay, I'm 20 miles in, I got 80 to go. That doesn't sound that great. And then when I was 80 in, I was like, I still have 20 miles to go, and that didn't sound that great. So, but with a 200, it's even more magnified, because a 50-mile run is a long way.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking, that is nothing. I still have 100 and wait, what are we doing now? 240. So I got 190 miles left. You know, I mean,
it's crazy.
That can break somebody down, because I know there's people who are in a lot better shape than me, run a lot more like dialed in, and have had to drop.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just, maybe it's that day, maybe it's something happening there, you know, because you don't know what your body is going to do, you know. So if you get behind on salt or you whatever, I mean, there's all sorts of things that contribute. But maybe it's just a bad day for 100 makes you drop. But it's just, I don't know, it's just there's so much involved. I can't say.
Stephen Jones, who we sort of, this is the memorial, the Moab 240 is a memorial for him. And that's a whole nother story, but he would say that the 200 was 100 squared, not two 100s. So it's really just, it's a whole different, you can't think of it as like two 100s, and mentally it's the same game. And I think people, if they don't have an outside reason for finishing these 200 plus mile races, like, they'll quit, because you need sort of something that motivates you beyond, you know, showing off or like, you know, proving to yourself.
Yeah.
But it has to be something bigger, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's, or a few things. Like I said, I go through a lot of different things to try to get through, but I mean, it is, it's just so special, and it's just a great test for everybody. I don't know. It's pretty exciting.
I think as you talk about that distance, 100 is just a day out of your life. But if something goes south in a 200, you can just go to sleep for 5 hours or 6 hours and totally rebuild yourself and reinvent yourself.
That's
true. If you go to sleep for 6 hours in a 100-mile run, you should be in the car halfway home. But if you sleep 6 hours, you're still in the game. You're still in the hunt and on a 200-mile distance.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Yeah, I wish I could be smarter earlier in those, but I just always got to, like I said, go until the wheels fall off. So I'm going to try to be smart. I mean, you know, like I said, I got 100 done and 30 at Bigfoot. So yeah, the math doesn't really work out. Cause it's like, oh, okay. I should have been just over 60 hours now. I was almost 80 hours. So you know, I wish the math worked like it did. And maybe if you go about it smarter and get rest earlier, maybe it would. Maybe I guess ideally it'd be more even. So I'm still searching for that.
Well, you know, here's the problem, Cameron, and I blame it on our race director here. There are sections that are only 19 miles, right? But it takes 9 hours to run that thing because there's so much elevation change. And if you tell somebody, yeah, I'm going to run 19 miles and it's going to take me 9 hours, they would think that you're sleeping halfway through the thing. But you look around you and there's strong athletes, very strong, that are just taking the same amount of time. It takes a long time to travel 19 miles out there. It becomes work.
Yeah. No, I know. I was thinking about this extra 35 she's got added on to this race. Because 35 normally, fresh, okay, that's fine. But 35 after 205, that could be a whole nother day. But I remember that exact conversation. I was with, I don't know, maybe 140 or something. I can't remember what it was. But there's this runner in Bigfoot, Meep is his name. That's all I remember. I was like, well, what do you figure for this stretch? And it was something like, I think it was 18 miles. And he's like, well, just got to figure 2 miles an hour. I'm like, what? I mean, does that seem ridiculous? But it's, you know, some of those stretches at Bigfoot that are just, you know, the 5,000 foot stretches that are longer like that. And it takes
hopping.
A while for sure. Yeah. I mean, it takes a while. So, you know, people always get, and you know, I've been on Rogan a number of times, and so there's a lot of people who don't run who look at the distance and look at the time and be like, oh, I could walk that fast. And I'm just thinking to myself, okay,
no,
good luck.
I think a lot of those people don't realize it's highly technical, like very steep. There's no switchbacks. Like at Bigfoot, there's not really switchbacks. It's more like, oh, you're going straight up there. And then it's also like there's a lot of down trees and a lot of thick brush. And so you can't just pound through it. It's slow.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I have to say when I first started, like when I ran that first McDonald Forest back in 2005, I did look at the splits and I had just done roads and I knew what I could run in a 10K or whatever. And I looked at them. I'm like, man, these guys are slow. They're running, you know, 9 minute miles or something. And then I did the race. there I was, you know, 18 minute miles. And so, it's just not being familiar with the challenges. And so that's just part of it. But I think, we're educating people who are interested and I get a lot of messages from people who are ready to ramp their game up. Maybe not to what we're doing here, but it's all part of the journey. You know, you start with the 5K and you, before you know, you're doing the Moab 240.
Hey, I have a question for you, Candace. It kind of came up. In all the years you've been doing these 200 milers, has anyone ever run a negative split
of? I haven't done the math actually to see if somebody has, but I wouldn't be surprised. Sometimes people get sick in the first half, you know, it's a combination of nerves and maybe just not eating properly. And then the second half, they just wake up and cruise through it. But I haven't crunched all the numbers, but it would be interesting. It's possible.
Yeah.
Hey, Cameron, I have an interesting question I've been dying to ask, ever since we knew you were going to come on the podcast. I assume going out and bow hunting, you're out there for days on end, you're exposed in some pretty nasty weather, usually hunting these big game, I would assume, is at least in North America, is in the winter, so it's cold. What is the toughest physical and mental place you've been, hunting or in an ultra?
I don't know. I mean, I've had some hard hunts. I mean, sheep hunts in the mountains are very hard. There's kind of two extremes. There's sheep hunting up on Pioneer Peak in Alaska, and my sheep was going to die and go off this cliff, and I don't know if I would have got off, so I ran down there as he was dying, and I grabbed his horns and pulled him up over this cliff, and was there when he died. And that country is really, really rugged. It's the same mountain that my best friend who got me into bow hunting, he fell and died on in 2015. Mm-hmm. So this is deadly country. So, I mean, that was, I don't know, it was just pretty intense. And then I've hunted Australia where it's almost close to, I don't know what it was, it's Celsius and whatever they do, but it's close to 120 Fahrenheit with 90% humidity. And we're hunting water buffalo and walking, you know, 10, 15 miles a day, and couldn't hardly find any water because there's so many buffalo that all the water sources are just blown out and ruined in mud and wallows and got buffalo piss in them, and they just stand there. And so that's the only water we have. So we're trying to treat the water, pour it through our t-shirts to get the big clumps out, do the ultra whatever light pin, and plus tablets, and it still tastes like buffalo piss. So I mean, both those are like the opposite ends of the spectrum. Both super hard, but there's a lot of bow hunts like that. I mean, because my thing is I like challenge, and I like hunting dangerous things in extreme conditions, and so I've been on, you know, I've been a lot of places sort of like that.
Well, Candace's aid stations are far superior to buffalo tasting urine, that's for sure. Scott.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, another compare and contrast thing. I'm wondering, I mean, you grew up hunting, you've been up in the mountains, you know how to use a compass and a map. Has that helped you at all getting into trail running, that you feel maybe an edge in confidence that you know how to get in and out of bad situations?
Yeah, I mean, right. I'm sure I'll say this and then get lost at Moab, but there's a lot of things that I think take just from experience. I mean, I can be running down a trail and notice if a log's cut, or notice an old blaze on a tree, or notice things that I know that I'm on, you know, a maintained or semi-maintained trail, or at one time was, just from old markings. And it just takes a little bit of doubt to screw people up at 2 a.m. after 120 miles and they hadn't seen a marker in a little while. And that little bit of doubt is what gets you slowing down or veering off, and then veering off is what leads you down the other wrong trail. And so, yeah, I mean, I think just being in high pressure situations makes me, you know, think pretty clearly when things aren't going right. And then also just experiencing the mountains. I can look at a map and, you know, see that the trail's going through the saddle, or like Candace likes to do, go up to the peak and back. Yeah. And so, yeah, I just kind of have a good visual of what to expect. And then also being able to put that, you know, just step by step, see kind of where I'm going to and have confidence. So I do believe it helps, because as we know, as runners or mountain runners, the worst thing in the world is to wonder if you're on the trail or not, mm-hmm. you know, or get lost and have to backtrack and lose time. And, you know, the whole race, you're thinking about those 5 extra miles you did, you know, and you should be done by now and that whole thing. So, you know, it's that's a big part of it. And I feel like I do have a little advantage there.
Boy, Cameron, you're right. You know, you put those 5 extra miles, and how many times do you do that math throughout the run? Somebody says, yeah, 5 miles more to the aid station. You go, yeah, I could have been there. Or on and on. It, yeah, 5 miles gets probably applied 10,000 times to that race.
Yeah, it does. It does. So, I mean, yeah, that's the worst. I know people do get turned around. I know Candace had somebody turned around here. Was that Bigfoot or Tahoe?
Oh, every race.
Where you had to go get them. No, but you had to go get somebody at night, right?
Oh, yeah. This year at Bigfoot. Yep. Yep. Bigfoot. Without the spot devices, I don't think he would have been found because he was so far. You know how you go off the trail and down the mountain and all of a sudden you're in that thick forest. And and I was like, oh, guys, I know exactly where that spot device. I know that area. I'm going to go grab him. But it wasn't as easy to find him, actually, as I had expected. But you're totally right, though, about following the cuts in the trees. And there's just certain signs that if you spend a lot of time in the backcountry, you start to notice, you know, especially in the snow, you have to follow those kinds of signs.
Yeah, the blazes. Yeah, I know. I think a lot of people are great, great runners, you know, and they sign up for these mountain races. And I do think it's sort of a wake-up call sometimes because it's not all running. I mean, it's like Bigfoot. It's a little bit of an adventure race also. I mean, as far as you're in the mountains. I mean, and these aren't maintained trails like maybe some people are used to. So you are going to have to think, you know, it's not just following somebody. So I think it's that another part of the challenge for some newer runners.
So coming up at Moab, what are some of the things that you're very careful with or concerned with for you? For instance, is it feet? Are feet something that are problematic for you and you're going to manage well? Is it your stomach? What things are you going to pay careful attention to for Cameron Haynes?
For me, it's just staying hydrated and staying up on fuel and salt. So, I mean, if I do that, I feel, as you guys know, you know, once you fall behind, it's really hard to get caught up. You got a little more time in a race like this, but generally, like in 100, if you fall behind, you're probably not going to get back to where you need to be. So I really want to be cognizant of staying up on fuel and hydration, getting the salt in every hour. You know, of course, you got to take care of your feet. My feet are, I always train with no socks on. So I run, I've been running for months. I never wear socks. I feel like my feet get pretty tough. And then I kind of baby them for the race with get them all lubed up and some good socks on there. And, that's my feet are good. And then it's just, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I just want to get 100 out of the way and then start thinking about it, you know, and just kind of get, I just want to get in a groove like everybody.
Yeah. I think I want to get 140 out of the way. I think, up the game there. It used to be just get 100 done and then, downhill. But, now I think it's 140 and then the race starts.
No, you know, when you're out of the triple digits left, that's a good sign. I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm going for.
Left.
Yeah. For double digits. So, Candace, are we going to have a lot of... Oh, go ahead, Cameron.
Oh, no, I just wanted to know how your 200 went.
Oh, good. I did Bigfoot, and then I've kind of got my arm twisted into Tahoe, and they both went well. And now since those two are done, it just became some peer pressure from maybe me.
You got to do the triple, Don.
Yeah, I got to do the triple.
So he's doing all three.
Yeah, you guys all drink the same Kool-Aid, and that's probably why I'm doing it. But I feel like I'm ready for it. I feel rested. I only ran a couple times between the other two races, and I've only run twice, and I'll run another time, but not too much. It's mostly rest is my preparation, and I'm best at that. So I think it's a good strategy for me. Resting is good.
I think you know that's a good point too, because I think personally I struggle, and I know other people do, especially gearing up for a big race like this is overtraining. I mean, I know I've went into races. And I can tell right out of the gate, I'm more beat down than I should have been because I wanted to, I mean, it's really hard, however, 2 weeks out or whatever we are now to get, you're not probably not going to get in better shape, but I have a hard time laying off the gas, you know? Mm-hmm. And, that's so it's good that you're resting because I want to try to follow suit.
You know, it's
a good technique.
I listened to what you had just said. You said, what are we, a couple weeks out? I think that I follow along your same level of preparation where some people I think would have it down to the hour. They probably have some countdown app telling them when the race starts. I'm really not too sure when it starts. I know it's the 13th, which is Friday. Thank you. And that's all I know, but I'm just kind of it is whatever it is. I'm not watching it that close. I'm just going to show up and do it.
You know, it just hit me. It's Friday the 13th, Candace? Seriously?
Yeah, well, I only realized that recently.
So I wasn't by design, huh?
No, it wasn't, but I like that. Yeah, I like that. You can't make it work that way every year, but this year is special.
well, that's good.
Cameron, so Cameron has a website, CameronHaines.com. You should go take a look at it. There's a video on the homepage that is just really cool. If you've never gone hunting or seen bow hunting, it kind of gives you a good idea of what we're talking about and what Cameron, what his passion is. But you said something in that video that just, I wrote it down that I just love because I think it really does translate into trail running. You said something to the fact that one thing that sets you apart from other bow hunters is that you get out, that you try to make something happen. And I really like that. A lot of people, you said there are a lot of hunters, sometimes when it's bad weather, they'll stay in their tent. But you don't do that.
Yeah.
You get out
yeah.
and you try to make something happen. And I think that really translates into training and even into, you know, running a race. You just get out. Just get out of the seat at the aid station and try to make something happen between this aid station and the next aid station. I just love that. I'm going to make t-shirts.
Yeah. that's
He has some good t-shirts on that site.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. It's you know, just sometimes with the hunt is I don't know what else to do other than just be out on the mountain. When you're on the mountain, anything can happen. And it's the same with running. I mean, running basically is, you know, all we need to do is move forward, you know? So it's just, as long as you're moving forward, maybe it's not that fast, but you'd be, I know I've been in town here and I've went to the store or something, saw somebody walking and passed them again when I left the store. And I'm like, God dang, they got a long way. And that was walking. So if you just are moving all day, you're going to cover a lot of ground. And so I think we overthink it sometimes and we get kind of lose confidence or get beat down and we spend too much time in that chair. And, but if we're just moving, just getting out there and do something, I think we'll be all right.
And you're exactly right, Cameron. I know that when nature calls and you've got to go borrow a bush and your running partner says, I'll just walk. And then you have to try to catch him.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you didn't just walk. You were running hard the downhills. I know it.
Yeah. It's amazing how far we can get. So
yeah,
and you don't have to be sprinting to do it.
Hey, by the way, I just looked on Cameron's website and looked at the t-shirts. There's one that I love. It says, "Nobody cares, work harder."
That's a great one.
Yeah.
I need to get one of those and post it above my bed on the ceiling. so when I wake up, I see that.
Thank you, Cameron. Your wife won't appreciate that, Scott.
that's pretty much sums it up. I mean, because everybody's got a sob story why something didn't work out, and really the only person that cares about your sob story is you. So it's like, I think about it the other way too. It's like if I achieve some big goal, it's like, you know, that's in the past. I don't really think about that. I'm like, okay, what's the next thing? Because nobody really cares about what you've done before. It's, hey, let's get Moab 240 done. You know, that's, you can't say, well, yeah, I didn't do very good here, but did you see what I did 2 years ago? I mean, nobody cares.
Yeah, Cameron, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought it up because it was what the question that I had remaining was, how long do we have to keep doing this? You know, we talked about We do it to build our own confidence, or we do it because then we can appreciate a chair more, or a bed more, or a meal more, a hot shower, etc. Is that going to wear off? Are we going to have to keep doing this through every decade of some kind of stretch so we can be comfortable? Or do we get to sit back and enjoy the fruits of our past labors? What do you think? Do you think we always need to be engaged?
I think so. I mean, I personally do, but I mean, I don't know what I'll feel like in 10 years or 20 years. There's probably a time where you feel like, okay, I've proven what I need to myself, or I've whatever. And so you'll just know at that time. I'm definitely not there yet. Right now, I'm looking for the next big challenge, but I think everybody will get there eventually, and, pushing yourself and being miserable won't be the thing you look forward to the most. We'll see.
Yeah. As I listened to you and I was thinking about it, it may not be 240 miles that we have to do, but I'll bet you the core group that's doing this kind of stuff and the people listening always have a little something in front of them, a little push, a little test. I don't think we'll ever be satisfied without a bit of a struggle. I think that's just our core, our makeup, our DNA. The people that have already put themselves there will always find something. And maybe they're at a convalescent home and they walk around the darn thing 10 times because the longest anybody's ever done it or furthest is 8. You know, who knows? There'll be something right that we push on.
Yeah, I bet you're right. I mean, it's life's funny like that. I just, I've always been kind of afraid of getting old because I've seen people who, my dad, for example, and he was like the ultimate athlete stud in his prime. And then, as aging happens and you can't do what you used to do, but you still want to be able to do what you used to be able to do. I've always been like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to deal with that. So it's like you try to ride that trajectory up and keep challenging and keep, it's almost like for me, I'm proving to myself, okay, no, I haven't lost a step. I'm still better than I have ever been, but there is an arc and it's going to happen. So I don't know what happens on the other side. I like to think like you explained, there's always, you just kind of readjust your goals, but, I don't know. I hope so. I mean, it's fun just right now, just testing it and giving the most, I think what we'll enjoy doing right now is we're giving the most we have at this time. And that's really all you can ask.
I think you're right. I don't think I could run 100 miles as fast as I have in the past. I think that leg speed may not be there. I don't know. I don't discount it. If I train specifically, I might be able to beat it, but that's in my mind. But yeah, that's one of the things the 200 appeals to me, because I can set new personal goals and records and not compare myself to the past. It's all new and fresh. And so I love going out there and signing my name up for the 200 because that's new territory, a new league, a new game.
Yeah.
So I like this discussion. It's been good.
Oh, well, I mean, I've listened to your podcasts for a long time, and it's an honor to be on here and talk with you guys. And of course, it's always an honor to talk with Candace, and can't wait to see everybody.
Well,
thanks for coming on.
We appreciate it. And you have a podcast yourself, correct?
Yeah, I never do it, but yeah, I do have one. It's called people love it, but it's just like, that's a whole YouTube thing also, but it's called Keith Hammond. Candace is on there, so listen to her.
Scott's responsible for show notes and linking interesting things. So your website will certainly be linked to your YouTube channel, and Candace's podcast on your podcast will be linked too. Is that okay, Scott? Can we do that?
Yeah, I like you volunteering me for things. I guess that makes up for me volunteering you for 3 200s this year.
That's right. You pushed me out there. Well, Cameron, best of luck at Moab. We'll get a chance to meet you in person and see you at least at the starting line. And then if you wait around a bit afterwards, maybe the finish line as well.
I'll be there, yeah. Now I look forward to seeing you guys. And 2 weeks away, it's going to be fun.
Good. And if you want to start slow, if you want to start slow, just hang out with me a little bit, because I am not going to do a 50K personal best out there to start the race.
Well, I hope I don't either.
He doesn't sound like he has full control of his speed.
No, I don't. I know myself, but I'm going to try. So.
Hey, Don. I've seen this. I've seen some pictures of this guy carrying half an elk on his shoulders. Maybe he's willing to give you a piggyback ride for a little bit.
Cameron, yeah. What do you say, buddy?
we can talk about it.
I think he'll have to. He'll have to quarter me if he's going to do it, and I'm not agreeable to getting quartered.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we
all are, right.
Yeah, I guess that's not going to work then.
No, it's not going to happen. All right, Cameron Haynes, we are honored to have you on this podcast and to share some of your wisdom and insight and excitement and enthusiasm for this sport. And you're a guy that has passion in a few areas, and it's nice to talk with you.
Oh, thank you. Great talking to you guys too. Have a good evening.
Okay.
We'll see you in Moab.
Okay. Take care.
Hey, Cameron, before you go, those Lakey poles, you're going to love them. And I'm going to send you a short little video on this, the clip that separates them from the rest. So if you see a video show up on your phone, just watch it a few seconds. Boy, they're great. And Candace sold them to you. I saw that she said they're good. So I think you'll like them.
Yeah, I mean, those poles make such a big difference for those long runs. I've never been, I've always been like, I don't want any extra weight. I don't want whatever. I'm not going to be hiking. I don't need them, but man, they're mandatory.
Do you use poles, trekking poles when you're out hunting?
No, I never used them. The first time I ever used them was a Bigfoot. And now, I did use them on this 24 hour run the other day or June. And, now, I mean, I wouldn't do a 200 without them for sure, but I don't use them hunting now.
You've got great upper body strength, and so you've got to use that. It's almost like cheating when you have those poles. It's almost you become a four-legged creature, and it's amazing how hills are manageable and how much better life is with poles.
Well, it's like, okay, so it's a numbers game. It's like how much percentage are you taking off your legs? You know, I mean, even if it's 1%, that makes a big difference over 4 days. So, I mean – And I know it's more than 1%. So yeah, it's I haven't felt like I'm cheating per se, because it still feels really hard, but it does feel like an advantage. I enjoy it. So thank you for getting me those poles.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, we'll see you out there. We appreciate the extra time you spent with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
Okay, bye.